The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Wednesday, June 19th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Hope you're all doing well on another hot but beautiful day in the Auburn Opelika area. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Alongside me in the studio, as he is every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, it's your favorite uncle. It's Uncle T-Bone. Happy Wednesday. Good to see you once again, brother. Welcome back to the studio.
Yeah, great to be back in the studio here at On the Line. ESPN 106.7, the show that tells it like it is and holds nothing back. Two numbers to remember, 334-321-1390. Give us a ring, 334-784-1067. That's the red hot new text hotline here at On the Line. They just pouring in. We could just make a whole week of shows off these texts we get. Some of these things are ridiculous. We can't read them all out, but give us a shout out. We love it. A lot to talk about. It's the meat of the summer. You know, there's recruiting news out there, as always.
Yeah, you've got some thoughts on that.
Got a lot of thoughts on that. Got a lot of thoughts on something you talked about yesterday when I was listening in while I was working. Who's got it tougher this year with more pressure? Kalen DeBoer, Hugh Freeze.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a whole a good segment on that near the end of the show yesterday in the back half, and it sparked a few other things that I wanted to talk about today, and I know you've got some thoughts on that.
There's some other coaches around this league that are going to have some pressure on them as well.
I think we can get into that too. And so we will talk about that. We'll also talk recruiting things. And then coming up in hour number two, really excited to do this. It's something that we do every year that I've been doing since I took over this show and really excited to get into it. Today's a perfect day to do it. No Jordan Hill from Dogs 247 taking the week off for him. You know, guys like that, we bring them on periodically through the summer when there's not as much going on. But then once we get really into July SEC Media Days, he will be back with us every single week. But coming up in the second hour, we are going to be ranking every SEC football schedule for this season from the easiest to the toughest. And so really excited to do that. We want to get your thoughts and opinions on that. So start sending those to us by text. We'll read yours and kind of have you be a part of it. So go ahead and give us a text, 334-784-1067. Give us who you think has the hardest SEC schedule, the easiest, where you think Auburn and Alabama rank in there. That's what we're doing in hour number two. But to get the show started, something that you wanted to start with was recruiting news, and not particularly Auburn, right? We do have Auburn recruiting things going on, coming off a huge weekend with Hugh Freeze and his staff. Of course, Julian Lewis was here this weekend. The buzz continues to be surrounding that situation. But there's some things outside of Auburn that have your eye, Uncle T-Bone, and you've got a couple of, some predictions or maybe some thoughts on what's going on in recruiting
right
now.
Yeah, I don't know about predictions, but it's more of a national story, which affects everyone here locally. Because the University of Southern California is just losing commitments left and right. Lincoln Riley and team out there had built a very strong recruiting class committed, right, with committable offers to start off the 2025 recruiting cycle, really shot up into the top 10 and making a lot of waves in the state of Georgia. And we've talked about this and will continue forever on this show, how important Georgia is to Auburn, but a lot of teams around the South and everyone nationally. But there's some teams specifically named Georgia, Florida, Florida State, Auburn, Alabama, and Clemson, and Tennessee when they're really rolling. who have just made a living out of recruiting the state of Georgia. And USC's come in from the great far west and landed some big-time recruits. Well, two of them today have decided they're decommitting. One of them is a massive recruit in Justice Terry. He's the number six player in the country, according to several recruiting sites. This guy's a five-star, 6'5", 275 defensive lineman from Manchester, Georgia, which is not very far from here, Jacob. Mm-mm. And the other one being another defensive lineman that was committed to him from Warner Robins, a place where Auburn historically has recruited very well, an edge, Isaiah Gibson, a four-star. You know, the number one edge possibly in the country, according to 247. He's 6'4", 245. Auburn's been all over that kid.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got some other guys in the South, specifically in Georgia, but some other places that are committed to the Southern California, one of them being Julian Lewis, another one Dwayne Morris, a running back Auburn's all over as well, and several other players. And you got to wonder, with these two big dominoes falling negatively, if ever you pronounce that, excuse me.
Sure, that'll work.
Ugh, sorry, I got a bug in my throat.
Negatively?
Negatively, thank
you. There
you
go.
That, I wonder if these other guys are about to open up their recruitment too. And I got to wonder, Jacob, in
uh-oh,
this new age
uh-oh
of college football recruiting and NIL, if something more is happening here. I really got to thinking about this, and it's like, how did Southern California, now look, that's a big-time college, a big-time school, a blue blood in some people's books. I still think they got a ways to work their way back into being blue blood status, but it's a very successful historical program, fact. But they have rolled down into Georgia, into the deep South, and taken some of the biggest names in college football recruiting this season and had them committed. And now they're beginning to leave. And I was like, how did they get these guys from down here to skip over Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Clemson, Auburn, Florida, Florida State, in this age of NIL money also,
mm-hmm,
and get them to commit so early in the recruiting cycle? And now I'm starting to wonder, now I'm not saying this is what happened, but I am starting to wonder, are there teams – in this wild west of NIL where the rules, maybe there are no rules anymore until all this gets straightened out in college football, in this whirlwind of change, are there teams going out and saying, I don't care if you sign with us or not, we want to have you, but if you'll get in early and we give you $10,000 or $20,000 in cash, will you just commit and stay committed for a couple of months and we'll pay half now and half later? Just to build up momentum in their recruiting? Is that an outlandish theory? Because you're seeing all these guys were like, oh, I'm going Southern Cal. I love the West. I love LA. I'm out.
Yeah, and there's a lot to that. And what I'll say is you are seeing it now earlier and earlier, these guys committing to big-time programs and then the battle to keep them committed. But you're seeing that growing as a trend in college football and in college basketball too, where guys are committing earlier and staying committed longer to some of these big programs. I have a lot of thoughts on that, but let's get to the phone lines. 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, this is Shane.
What's up, Shane?
Hey, man. I was just curious. I keep seeing, little articles about Hugh Freeze on the hot seat already.
That's ridiculous.
And then you guys brought up, who had a hotter seat or who needs to win more or something.
Well, we brought up who do you think has more pressure on them this season?
Who has more pressure? So, is that really a I mean, do either of these two really have that much pressure right now? I mean, nothing will happen with DeBoer on season one, unless he loses like six games, and then I can see that. But
well, that's kind of where that's coming from. Is I think Hugh Freeze, right, in year two, in this shorter cycle of a coaching span and coaching life nowadays, where you have less years than you ever have had in the past, right? It's a 3-year window where if you're not turning a program successful in 3 years and not showing where the progress is being made, you're seeing coaches fired quicker than ever before. And so I think that's why this year is crucial for Hugh Freeze. But then you look at Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, no, he's not going to get fired after year one, but it is important for him to go in and win some games and have it, I guess, not go from national title to 6-6, kind of like you mentioned, because he has to win over that fan base. And they think they trust him now because they're getting 3- and 4-star recruits. But the second he starts losing games, they'll turn on him immediately. And so that's why I think he has a lot of pressure too.
Hey, one thing, I tried to get in on yesterday, but I called a little bit too late. But you asked something about the who had a more difficult schedule or something like that between Auburn and Alabama, the wins and losses. If Alabama had more losses, you know, going into the Iron Bowl or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to Tennessee, they go to LSU, they go to Wisconsin, I think, maybe.
Yep.
They have, and then they play Georgia. That's four games. You know, if they lose those four games, the sky is falling over there in Tuscaloosa.
Exactly.
And on the Auburn side, what games are we losing? If it looks like the way it's kind of looking, and we've got an improvement on the offense, and it looks like we do, and it looks like we got to improve defense. Which games are we losing? If Alabama is 6-4 at the end of the year, and we're 9-1, 9-2, this is lofty goals, but let's just say that. Are we really saying that that's an automatic loss that we're going in there?
No.
Because I say we lose to Georgia. Yes, definitely.
Sure.
What's the other loss?
I would say we're
guaranteed.
I would say that if I had to bet, guaranteed loss at Georgia, and that every other game that Auburn plays, they could win. And that includes every other game that Auburn plays next season outside of Georgia. Going into this season right now, they could win. I'm not going to say they are. I'm not even going to say they're 50-50. But there is a possibility that they could go into Tuscaloosa and win that game. I agree with you. And I also agree with you that Alabama's schedule is much tougher than Auburn's. But we're going to we'll get into it more in the second hour. But if you just look at their non-conference schedule, South Florida is no cupcake, and at Wisconsin is going to be a tricky game.
Man,
okay, and we pull California at home.
If South Florida came in there and beat Tuscaloosa,
oh my god,
I don't want anything for Christmas.
You know, look, and I'm with Jacob. I don't think that Kalen DeBoer should be on any kind of hot seat. But no. Let's just be real honest here, Shane. They lose to Texas last year. And you turned on the airwaves locally, beginning with our good friend Doug Amos' show in Montgomery, the midday show, the Max Roundtable here.
Yep. You can listen. Oh, yeah, I listen to him.
11 to 2. And there were people calling in saying that Jalen Milroe should have been benched. He should have never been starting. And there were people also calling in saying that Saban should retire. He's finished. I mean, look at every – and that is a fact.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do we need to go and pull tape? So you think that if Kalen DeBoer comes out and I'm not saying you, but just listeners out there, you know, gets a win over Western Kentucky, struggles against South Florida, loses to Wisconsin at Wisconsin, then Georgia comes to town and kicks their butt, you don't think that there's going to be a massive amount of pressure on him at that point? Mm-hmm. I mean, they put pressure on the greatest of all time.
I know. It's great. And I'm kind of getting like goosebumps that we're talking about it right now.
Yeah, we're getting close, brother.
That's right, man.
I know. Where are you guys?
Yeah, appreciate the call, Shane. Good to hear from you as always, brother. 334-321-1390, the number to call. You can also shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. And he brings up interesting points, and we are going to get into that a lot more in the second hour. And even coming up at about 2:30, we're going to get back into that conversation that I brought up yesterday, the pressure comparison between Hugh Freeze in year two and Kalen DeBoer in year one, because there's a lot to break down there, and there are arguments for both sides.
No question. Look, I will say that I think that any big-time college football coach is going to feel pressure every single season.
As they should.
The more you win, the more your fans expect you to win. And the more you lose, the more fans expect you to turn it around immediately.
I mean,
they're paid a lot of money.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
So don't feel too sorry for them.
Yep.
to coach a game that kids can play in the backyard, ultimately.
I was going to go and add on to that. The more money they make, the more pressure they have to win, too, which is exactly
that,
how
I would
be
completely opposite. The more money I made, the more I just let it all roll off my back.
That's the Brian Harsin way, right?
His was the more I could steal, the less I'll do. How about that?
334-321-1390. We'll go ahead and take an early break here in hour number one. I want to get back on the recruiting thing. Shane, thanks so much for calling in, man. Always great to hear from you, one of our
I've got some more loyal listeners.
Oh, I know you do.
I think there's a lot of beyond gray area going on right now in a completely opposite way than the old way where people were getting bags of cash.
Oh, gosh. He just whipped out the tinfoil hat, ladies and gentlemen.
Here we go.
334-321-1390. Give us a call. Shoot us a text at 334-784-1067. More recruiting talk and conspiracy theories when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
All right, we continue on here in hour number one on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. It's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Garnes. We appreciate you being with us on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. All right, put your tinfoil hat back on over there. I hear the noises, the aliens coming down. We were talking a little recruiting, and again, we're going to get to the Hugh Freeze, Kalen DeBoer pressure conversation coming up in about 10 minutes or so. But we were talking recruiting, and you had started to bring up in the fact that, look, recruiting is different than it's ever been. It's more intense than it's ever been. And it's also, some would say, possibly dirtier than it's ever been. Given the current situation of college athletics, and in this particular instance, college football. And what brings that up is the fact that USC, Southern California, has lost 2 5-star commits out of the 2025 class. And, of course, Auburn is trying to make it 3 and try to flip Julian Lewis, which I will say is still going to be a tough task, but is still doable. It is a very doable feat, especially after this weekend, right? He said good things about Auburn. I think Auburn is all in on him. And I said yesterday, NIL will not be a problem here. Auburn's going to do whatever they have to do to get this guy to be an Auburn Tiger. I promise you that. And so while it's still tough to flip somebody, Auburn is trying to do that with Julian Lewis from USC. But you had some more thoughts on kind of what recruiting is and where it is going, and I guess what it could become, right, moving forward through the next, I mean, even the next 5 years. You can't even look at a decade. You have to look at even just the next 5 years.
Yeah. I'll say this. I think it's just a guaranteed fact that just all big-time teams are now paying players just to visit. I mean, I'm completely 100% convinced of that. Like, you know, when Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee got in trouble there, people would show up on campus and they'd have a McDonald's bag allegedly with $500 in cash.
A little bit more than a McDouble in there.
A little bit more than a Big Mac and an extra large fry in there.
Yeah, throw on an apple
$500.
Pie.
That's nothing now, buddy. I believe, and no one's told me this, but I believe that any big-time school, you're going to have to shell out a couple of grand at least for bigger-time players to come visit, $5,000. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know that for a fact, but that's what I believe.
I mean, it's not a crazy thought.
And then to put on top of that, if you're going to do that, well, why not let's take $100,000 of our NIL, get 10 of the best players around the country on campus early, and say we'll give you $10,000 in cash to commit with an NIL deal, half now and half, and you got to stay committed to us for 2 months. We'll continue to recruit you, and you can take all your visits, but that's going to help us build some momentum and get us some street cred in the press, right?
Sure.
So if you're going to take it that far, and then all of a sudden you see USC, who was ranked in everybody's rankings top five, falling down into the 20s because they've gone to Georgia and got Justice Terry, a 5-star number one defensive tackle in the country, and Isaiah Gibson, the number one edge in the country, and Julian Lewis to commit. I mean, you're telling me that they just loved it out there and they all just committed on a whim. That's what you're telling Uncle T-Bone. Okay.
You're not buying, huh?
I'm not buying that. So if teams are if my theories hold true and teams are paying for visits and they're paying for people to commit, would they pay someone not to commit somewhere? You can go visit, But what if you had a group, I don't know, a club that just, you know, 1,000 people popped in $10,000 to be part of it because they're alumni or have an interest in their university being very successful in recruiting and, I mean, football. And you just took some of that money and played some dirty tricks.
I mean,
we don't want you to go over to Auburn this weekend, like you said. You don't have to visit us, but here's $10,000 not to visit there. Do you think that that's unreasonable?
In today's world, no. Well, I still think as of right now, yes, it is. But, and what I mean by that is that still an outlandish thought? I think so, but I can see where it could get to that point. I could see where that could be coming down the line, sure.
Everybody talks about Texas A&M, and I get all the oil money, Uncle T-Bone, they're so wealthy out there. Them in Texas got more money than God. And say they did, and they're just so flush with NIL money that they had someone that was the five-star number one running back out of McAllen, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And this is like Eric Dickerson Jr., man. Everyone, the vultures are coming. They got to have them. They're throwing everything in the kitchen sink at this kid. But he just doesn't want to go to your school. He's either thinking about going to Texas or Oklahoma. But you're flush with cash if you're A&M, and you got this club out there, right? The Howdy Doody Club or whatever they call themselves out there, the equivalent to a Red Velvet Club or the Silver Circle over at Georgia, right? And they're just so flush with cash, they're like, look, man, what are they offering at UNIL, both schools? $500,000. We'll give you $2 million not to go to either one.
Yeah. And it seems
go
like
– go out west – and we'll have first right of refusal when you get into the portal, if you ever want to come back, and just go to a different conference, because we would rather play against you in the playoffs because both of those teams are on our schedule for the next 2 years. Think about that. Is that outlandish? Is that unreasonable in today when there's hundreds of millions of dollars on the line?
Yeah, and that's what it almost just is overwhelming to think about, because – I just continue to say, go back 10, 15, 20 years ago, and these types of conversations were
not even thought
of being had.
That's,
yeah.
That's your program being SMU in 1989.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And then
and I'm
not
even
being,
blinking an eye at it.
Not even and not being relevant for the next 20 years if you get caught in situations like that. And now we're getting to a point where you have money, like you said, hundreds of millions of dollars being thrown around, openly being thrown around, because it's all becoming legal. It's all becoming okay. It's not even in the rule book anymore. It's getting to that point. And
point in the rule book to me, if you've got some extra cash laying around in your club or whatever it is, and there's a big-time recruit thinking about going to your rival, and you're going to throw $50,000 around to various media outlets to write negative stories about your rival. Do you think that could happen?
I think it could, sure.
You think it happens in politics? You know it happens in politics. Why couldn't it happen in such a big business like college football, with all these blogs and all these writers and all these media people scrambling for clicks and links and all that stuff?
Well, look at sports in general, not just college sports, but just look at sports. It is politics. It is.
Unfortunately, it is politics.
Look at all the big storylines. I mean, you've got the WNBA, Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese. That's politics. You look at the NFL, right, and all the different rules changes and the money that's being thrown around. And you look at college football. I mean, you've got they're literally talking about NIL in Congress. They're talking about this in our government. And then it's all about perception. It's all about the view. It's all about how you look in the eyes of the media and the fans and all of that.
What about, Jacob, you've tapped out your resources. You got your class and your transfer guys in. You only got a couple hundred grand left. You can't really go out and get that four-star player that's thinking about going to your rival. And you know, and you've talked to him. You've called Uncle Jesse, who helped, you know, who came on the visit with him, right? And you say, hey, man, what are they offering y'all over there? Well, they're offering us $400. But Clemson's only offering $300, so we're going there. Well, why don't we just give you this other $200 and you go to Clemson? and you help them commit somewhere else.
See, where any of that, where all of this gets murky, and this is what I've continued to say, this is all going to have to be in writing. Because look at what's happening. Look at what's happening, right? You've got guys that were promised millions of dollars and then, whoop, sorry, Florida said
lawsuit
no thank
time.
You. Exactly. Exactly. Legal
think
issues.
About it. Just think about it.
Ah, here we go. Can you hear it? I can hear the UFOs flying through the studio right now. 30 minutes into hour number one. We'll get to the Hugh Freeze and Kalen DeBoer. Who's got more pressure this year? We're talking about that coming up next.
Are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. And as we get into a conversation that I had a little bit yesterday, you were listening the other yesterday, Uncle T-Bone, of course, not with me on Tuesday, Thursdays, working and doing your thing. But you were listening, driving around in the Auburn Opelika area. And we also had Shane call in about this earlier. Talking about the pressure on the two big head coaches in the state this season. Hugh Freeze at Auburn going into year two, and Kalen DeBoer starting in Tuscaloosa year one at Alabama. And the original question, and we can kind of branch off of this, the original question was who has more pressure to win this year? And you can say that one has more than the other, or you could say that they're two different things. I totally agree, and I think there's a lot to break down here. Shane brought up some interesting points about the schedules, which we're going to get to later on in the show. We'll be ranking our SEC schedules, toughest to easiest, coming up in hour number two. And that plays a lot into this. The fan bases and the money and the history, all of those things play a factor here. And so we want to hear from you, the listener. 334-321-1390. That's the number you can call in, or you can shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. There's a lot of factors here, Uncle T-Bone. And the take that I had yesterday, in case you missed it, was, yes, they are two different situations. Hugh Freeze is going into year two at Auburn. Kalen DeBoer is going into his first year. Mm-hmm. You're also talking about two totally different program situations right now. Kalen DeBoer is walking into probably the best situation that any year one coach has ever stepped into. He's walking into what Nick Saban left him, what the greatest of all time is leaving behind. Okay? Hugh Freeze walked into one of the worst situations in the history of the Auburn football program. So I understand that these two situations cannot be compared on a linear scale right at the same level. You see what I'm saying here? Mm-hmm. I understand they are two different situations. But what Shane was getting to is what I was getting to, which I want you to comment on, is Alabama fans have had it really good for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And the moment that it starts going the wrong way, they will start to lose it. And
I mean, that's proven. That happened last year.
Yeah.
Game two. Texas walked into Bryant-Denny, was man enough to push Alabama around and did it. And you had former players on other shows around the state talking about how soft Alabama's team was. I mean, give me a break. It was just one loss. And I think even people like me were on the radio going, gosh, guys, I mean, you got the greatest of all time. He'll get it figured out. And he did. Got him in the Final Four. So that's a proven fact. If they lose a game early that they don't think they should lose, they're going to hyperventilate in Tuscaloosa.
And so with that, I ask the question, who has more pressure to win this season? Is it Hugh Freeze at Auburn, or is it Kalen DeBoer at Alabama?
Well, let's define winning first for both programs.
That's a good idea.
You know, what's the expectation? What is an honest, legitimate expectation for Auburn this year?
Auburn should have 8 wins this year.
Okay.
With the schedule that they have, with the roster that they have, and the way that last year ended and the sour taste in everybody's mouth, they should have something to prove. Hugh Freeze, and I think they do, mm-hmm. and this new-look staff, they have something to come out and prove. To prove that last year at the end was a fluke. That it was not a look into the future of the crystal ball of what this staff and this organization and this program will be under him. He has that to prove, and he should want to prove that right now, this season. And given the roster, given the recruiting, the transfer portal, the development that this staff has and promises that they can do with players, and the schedule that Auburn has, again, we're ranking schedules later on today, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you, Auburn's got one of the easiest ones in the SEC. They should have 8 wins minimum. And I've continued to say Auburn fans should demand it. They should demand 8 wins this season. And so that, to me, that's what a winning season this year. That's what winning looks like for Auburn in 2024.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, look, I've said it, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it forever. Hugh Freeze inherited the worst situation in Auburn in my lifetime, except maybe Pat Dye. And in Pat Dye's first season, I don't think they won 6. I'll have to go back and look. But they were competitive in several games, and they looked lost in a few games, just like Auburn did last year. Auburn looked lost in some of the worst moments they could look, though, that I've seen in my lifetime last year. Hugh Freeze is having to, like Pat Dye, build the entire football program over infrastructure-wise outside the roster and to make it inside the roster.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he was kind of forced some people on him or had to make some quick hires last year just because he got here so late, leaned on some people that recommended some folks that were available. We've obviously upgraded at the coaching staff. We've obviously began the process of upgrading the roster. And I think this season, his second season, should look a lot like Coach Dye's second season. With an 8-win, decent bowl game against a decent opponent.
Beating a team that you're not supposed to beat.
Beating a team that you're not supposed to beat. Maybe 2, but losing kind of heartbreakingly in some games and losing 1 badly. It's just all of the process of rebuilding a program, a proud program that's just been beat down, in my opinion, since 2017.
And then, then on the flip side, what does winning look like for Alabama this
season? Top 5 is what they're going to demand, at the very least, a college football playoff berth.
What's a realistic non-Alabama fan from an outside perspective for college football? What do for Auburn folks, but then just for people in college football, and given the situation,
I'm going to try and separate myself from the fan here and be more of an analyst. Looking at their schedule, it's very difficult on the SEC side of things. We'll get into that in the second hour. I don't think they quite have the playmakers on defense that they've had under Saban. I don't care who they brought in at defensive coordinator. Nick Saban's one of the greatest of all time on defense. I think that defense is going to struggle. I think that offense will be explosive. Jalen Milroe's easily one of the top 5 players in college football right now. Could be a Heisman finalist. He's got to work on some of those short throws. I think Alabama's going to lean on the run game. Their offensive line's one of the best in the country. There's some wide receivers that need to step up. They don't quite have the wide receivers that they did under Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, but who does? But with that amount of talent that's still there and the infrastructure that's left, they got to win at least 10 games. Got to. That should be the expectation, which would probably, with their schedule, get them in the college football playoffs.
I think so, but I'll give you this. I don't think they have 10 wins on that schedule. I really don't. I really, really don't. I count 4 losses. I count 4 losses. And maybe I'm discounting and not giving enough credit to this team and the talent that they do still have on that roster. And I'll definitely admit this. I am overlooking, and I have to do a better job at this, I'm overlooking how good of a coach Kalen DeBoer really is.
Oh, he's an excellent coach.
I'm 100% am overlooking that and have to remind myself, this guy was on the verge of winning a national title last year. And so
I question some of the staff.
Yeah.
Compared to past staff.
Sure. Staffs have coaches all over the place now.
It does kind of concern me. Will the presence of the former coach be looming like a massive shadow? And will people be looking up in the stands to see if Nick's in his office peeking out the window during games? You know, that's a ton of pressure right there. But I think Kalen DeBoer can handle it. I'm not saying he can't, by saying he's got more pressure on him than Hugh Freeze does, and I believe he does.
You think Kalen DeBoer?
Yes.
So that gets back to our question. You think he has more pressure than this year?
Yes, but that doesn't mean that I don't think he can handle it. You know, Billy Napier's got more pressure on him than anybody in college football has had in years, and I'm not sure he can handle it. I think Kalen DeBoer can handle it. I think he's that good of a coach, and he's going to be looking to come in and prove to everybody that I can handle the pressure. I'm as big as the shadow that's cast over me, and I'm going to make some statements. But just like Hugh Freeze coming in, first year, DeBoer gets in there kind of late, got to put a staff together. Mm-hmm. Some of these people that he thought were coming with him, they went to the Seattle Seahawks, these people that really he relied on. You know, he's got to trust on some local guys. I got some questions about this Kane Womack guy at defense. A lot of Alabama people tell me that they're going to be fine and that people think a lot about him. You know, the South Alabama head coach, you don't become a head coach, even at a program like South Alabama and its size, without knowing X's and O's. But I got a lot of questions about that defensive side. But, yeah, I think Kalen DeBoer can handle the pressure, but I do think he's got more pressure on him just because the schedule, I mean, starting with all those X factors, but throwing the schedule too, it's brutal.
Well, you know, you bring up the staff part of this, and that's just something that always happens. I mean, look at Hugh Freeze's staff in year one. I mean, you take anything you can get.
You just got to get some bodies.
And look at how that's already changed from year one to year two. You have to expect that to happen for Alabama from year one to year two. You hope that it doesn't if you're an Alabama fan, because
Nick Saban made changes to his staff
every
year one. Major Applewhite was the offensive coordinator year one. He wasn't there year two.
Yeah, but then eventually that became free, or Saban had to change his staff because guys were leaving to be head coaches.
Because they were so successful.
Yeah, exactly. But early on, that's just how it goes. And I said yesterday that Kalen DeBoer has the pressure to step into Tuscaloosa and win immediately, because he has to win over that fan base. Let's just be honest. Because there's going to be a massive group of that fan base that will never accept him. I mean, will never accept him. Why? Because he's not Nick Saban.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, look, the only other person that I think in college football that I can remember that walked into a situation comparable to the one that Kalen DeBoer has walked into is when Jimmy Johnson left the U and Dennis Erickson came from Washington State. And people are like, who is this guy? Mm-hmm. But I mean, they were so good down there, and that was a machine running a lot like Alabama. And he was a good coach, and he had, you know, immediately had success. And I think people at the U accepted him fine after he had some success. If Kalen DeBoer comes in, doesn't make the college football playoffs, there's going to be not just a small group of people that won't ever accept him. If he doesn't make the college football playoffs this year, 50% of that fan base will begin to question whether or not he should have ever been hired.
Which is borderline outlandish. I mean, that's borderline insane. But, right, the college football playoff is easier to make now than it's ever been. It's a 12-team playoff. You get to double-digit wins, you're in. Especially
maybe
from the SEC.
Now, yeah.
From the SEC, mm-hmm. You're in.
Now, there could be 5-10 win teams from the SEC. They won't all make it.
Alabama would.
With that schedule, yeah. And it depends on who you lose to also. You know, if you lose to Georgia and Oklahoma, yeah, okay. You lose to Auburn and Missouri, and there's five, and there's four other. And not to mention, what if there could be 3 10-win teams from the ACC, 3 from the Big Ten, 3 from the what's it called now, Big 20 out in the Midwest?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah, and 5 from the SEC. You've got to take conference champions too. There will be a 10-loss SEC team eventually left off.
But this flashes back to last year's playoff. Do you think Alabama's one of those teams they leave out? There's no way. Because of TV, because of ratings, because of money. That flashes back to that conversation. Now, Alabama is not
They've
as sexy as it
before.
Used to be. It's not as sexy as it used to be because it's not Nick Saban running it anymore. But if Alabama has any slim chance to make that college football playoff, you better believe that they will be in there.
They've been left out before. I mean, I believe that more times than not, they'll get the benefit of the doubt, but it's not always 100%.
I'm going to say this before we get to break, and we'll continue this conversation when we come back. Even with an expanded college football playoff, for Alabama fans to expect and demand, you can demand it, that's one thing, but to legitimately expect Kalen DeBoer to walk in and take this team to a college football playoff in year one, I think that's being unfair.
Wow.
I think that's unfair.
They're giggling right now.
Good.
They're gripping the steering wheel, white knuckling, going down I-85 back to Lynette. They're gripping that steering wheel right now, Jacob, just going, we expect that every year.
And you know what? That's fine. Roll Tide. That's fine. But I think that's unfair to Kalen DeBoer. I really do, because there's not as much talent that Nick Saban used to have. This is one of the harder schedules I've seen them play in a long time.
There's a lot of talent there still, but there's a lot of talent everywhere now.
Exactly. The playing field is a lot more even than it used to leveled. Be. It's much more leveled. Which is, I mean, but anywhere else.
They haven't, except no one's, it will take a couple of years in a row of them not making the college football playoffs to acknowledge the fact that the playing field is more leveled than ever.
But it also will get to this. Going for Kalen DeBoer going into year two will be the same conversation we're having about Hugh Freeze right now going into year two. If year one is not, if they don't make the playoff in year one, you're telling me the pressure's not ramped up for year two and Kalen DeBoer? You better believe it.
It'll be as bad as it is on Billy Napier right now at Florida.
But where else, any other program that would have a year one head coach, would the expectation be to make the college football playoff? I don't care if Ryan Day left Ohio State and they hired a new head coach. You cannot expect to make the playoff in year one under a head coach. That, not saying they can't, but for that to be the bar and the standard, I don't know, man. And I guess you have to know that when you take the job if you're Kalen DeBoer, but I just think that's a little unfair to him. We'll talk more about this as we wrap up hour number one. When we come back, shoot us a text. We want to hear your thoughts on all of this. 334-784-1067. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 1067. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up a fun hour number one here on the show, we're continuing to talk about this question of DeBoer and Freeze. More pressure in 2024 given the schedule, given rosters, given the situation, everything like that. And look, we continue talking about this through the break and have so many more things to say. We got some people texting in. John in Auburn texted and said, I think DeBoer has much more pressure. 8-4 gives Freeze an extension, allows him to continue to coach here, but would land Kalen DeBoer in the hot seat to a significant portion of their fan base, which is what you and I were sort of saying before we went to break. Again, I want to get this out on the airwaves. I understand that one coach is in year one and one coach is in year two, but John's right. 8-4 for Hugh Freeze, showing progress and showing the future of the program growing. Yeah, that's cool. I think 8-4 should be the floor for Auburn. That should be the minimum. But it would be good enough, right? It'd be good enough for Auburn fans to give him another year to allow him to continue to build and recruit and do the things that he's been doing. But in year one, for Alabama and Kalen DeBoer, while I think 8-4 would be acceptable and understanding in year one, they would not. No they way. Would tear him a new one. They would be livid, especially if they're the wrong losses, right? If Auburn comes in and beats them in the Iron Bowl, if they let whatever happen, I mean, I had their schedule pulled up a second ago. I mean, if they let South Florida, which is not going to happen, okay? That's not going to happen. But you see what I'm saying here. Missouri come in and beat you inside of Bryant-Denny, go on the road and lose to Oklahoma in their first year in the SEC late in the season. How about you go out on the season with a couple of game losing streak? What if they lose three out of their last four? At LSU, Mercer squeezed in there, but at Oklahoma and Auburn. I mean, if they're the wrong losses, not just a loss, but, I mean, man, you could be talking about some serious turmoil going on.
Yeah,
up there.
You better get in touch with multiple DHRs in North Alabama counties if that happens. I mean, there's going to be some gnashing of the teeth and much wailing. Mm-hmm. It would be pure radio gold, buddy. I'd be tuned in to every local show for 24 hours straight, like 15 days in a row, just soaking it in, because it would be what I appreciate the most in college football, because I'm a fan, I speak from a fan's heart, and it would be the ultimate fanaticism that you would ever see in college football. And, it's going to happen one day. And you just can't kick the can down the road, in, especially in today's college football world, successfully like a dynasty forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to happen. And when it does, it is going to be a bloodletting of emotion. And just and probably one of the reasons why I continue to do what I do, trying to help out here in radio. It'll be awesome. But I don't think it's happening this season. I think they're going to be pretty dang good. 8-4 for Auburn. I think it would just prove not necessarily as important to the fans, because Auburn fans, I believe, have lined up behind Hugh Freeze even after the disaster the end of last season was, losing to New Mexico State, Alabama, and Maryland the way we did. It's almost like we've forgotten about it.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, to the recruits. Auburn's selling a dream right now, recruiting-wise. I think it's a good sell. Now they got to go out this season and prove it to these people that, you know, still in the back of their mind probably think going to Georgia or going to Alabama or going to Clemson or going to Ohio State is a safer play.
Hour number one in the books. Had a lot of fun with some recruiting talk, some pressure talk in June. Man, can't you feel it? Can't you taste it? We're 73 days away from the start of Auburn football. Coming up in hour number two, we are ranking the easiest to toughest schedules in the SEC for football this season. You do not want to miss it. Stay tuned. Hour number two coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, had some recruiting talk in there, talked Hugh Freeze versus Kalen DeBoer, pressure in 2024, lots of fun conversation in the first hour that, I'll be honest, man, was gone in the blink of an eye. So if you missed any of that, you can go and catch it with the podcast later on today. You know where to find it, don't you? ESPNAU.com. That's our station website. You can also just search On the Line on any of your podcasting platforms. It will be posted for you after the show today. Excited to get to this. We've had this planned, and we're ready to get into it this hour. We'll see if it takes us the whole hour or not. I'm sure it will. We'll get on conversations and tangents and things like that. We want you to be a part of this, okay? We want you to, probably won't take any phone calls, but definitely going to take text in the On the Line text box. We are ranking 1 through 16, which is still weird to say, hardest to easiest schedules in SEC football this year. All right, we do this every year. I've done this since I took over this show. I believe this is my, third summer, second summer? I can't keep up. But we are ranking the SEC schedules in football from toughest to easiest, 1 through 16, and we want to hear from you, okay? Shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. You can give us 1 through 16. You can tell us if you agree, disagree with us, who has the hardest schedule, who has the easiest schedule, who do you think should be moved around, whatever the case may be. Send us a text. We want to hear from you. 334-784-1067. Number one being the hardest, 16 being the easiest. Okay, that's how we're doing this. 16 easiest, number one hardest, toughest schedule. We're talking from every single game, non-conference and conference, all the way from August 31st all the way through the end of November. All right, after Thanksgiving, we're starting at the bottom and working our way up. Uncle T-Bone, I'm going to let you kick this off here in hour number two. Who has the easiest schedule in the SEC for college football this season, and why?
Oh, that's the University of Missouri for me.
I mean, Missouri at 16.
Yeah, I mean, their non-conference schedule is a absolute joke. Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, God, they're horrible. They will have Bill O'Brien, those Redcoats. And UMass. Okay? They will be favored in every single game they play. That is, let me count these up real quick. 7 games straight before they travel to Tuscaloosa on October 26th.
You think they're going to be favored against A&M on the road?
Yes.
Auburn at home?
Oh, they're already a 10-point favorite preseason
Auburn. Yeah, you're right.
So, you know, and I like that 10 for Auburn right now, and I think that line will change.
You better believe it.
But they miss Texas. They miss Georgia. They miss LSU. You know, I just don't see a lot of problems for them. They host Oklahoma after getting a week off at traveling to Alabama with a bye week, and they end the season with South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Arkansas.
Yeah.
Weak.
Well, I think that's what a lot of people are looking at with Missouri is the fact that they're going to start 4-0, and they will probably end 3-0, right? They're going to get 7 gimme, I mean, basically gimme wins this year.
I just don't think A&M's good. I think they're going to struggle big time this year. I think Elko's going to find out real quick that this ain't the ACC.
That's a coach that nobody's talking about being a newcomer in this conference.
They just have not been able to put it together. Yeah, I know they got talent and more money than God, but everybody does in college football today.
Mm-hmm.
I think A&M is in for a big fall this season. And Missouri will go in there and just dominate them.
Yeah, Missouri's got 8 wins, in my opinion, just off the rip before they even go to A&M or Auburn or Bama or playing Oklahoma.
Their toughest 3 games are hosting Auburn, hosting Oklahoma, and then their toughest at Alabama.
And those are all in a row, right? Auburn, right. At Bama, and
they
get home a break. For Oklahoma.
Yeah, and there's like a bye week. They get the bye week in between Alabama and Oklahoma. I mean, you go 2 and 3 out of those, you're going to the college football playoff.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you just win the 1, I think it would still be a successful season for Missouri. So you have them at the bottom. You have them as the easiest schedule in the SEC this season. I have Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss Rebels. I think they have the easiest schedule in the SEC, and I don't think it's particularly close. They open up with Furman, Middle Tennessee, Wake Forest, and Georgia Southern. Talk about weak sauce to get the season started.
Yeah.
All right? They're playing a team out of the ACC. They got to go to Wake Forest. Okay.
They'll kill Wake Forest.
They will. They'll put up 70 at their house. Okay? They're going to start 4-0. Their SEC opener is at home against Kentucky. Woohoo. Then their first SEC road game is at South Carolina. Okay, that'll be an 11 a.m. game on ESPN. They'll win that game. Their first true test is at LSU, and there's going to be preseason hype once again and early season hype once again. Ole Miss going to make the playoff. Ole Miss is undefeated. Watch out. Here comes top 10 Ole Miss. All right, they're going to go on the road at LSU. They're going to host Oklahoma. Then they go to Arkansas, which that Arkansas is not good. Okay,
they're
Ole Miss
terrible.
Is going to beat them by a lot. They get Georgia this year, but it's at home. It's
Kirby
in Oxford.
Kirby Smart has absolutely kicked Lane Kiffin's butt in these matchups. That is a big L for them. And then this is why I had, you know, I think Florida's got major problems, but anytime you go down to the swamp, it's a different ballgame, and they'll have to go down to Florida after hosting Georgia. If they somehow upset Georgia, that is a big time letdown game for them.
Yeah, but I think by that point, I think Florida, because I have, you can guess where I have them in this hardest and easiest schedule ranking.
That's an easy pick.
Go ahead and tell you. They have the hardest schedule in the SEC.
And the nation.
I think by that point, Florida may not even have a head coach.
Will Ron Roberts be the head coach by then?
Oh, man.
Giving up 4th and 31s left and right.
And then they host the Egg Bowl this year. So their toughest games at LSU, Oklahoma at home, and hosting Georgia. Again, win 2 of those, which I think you can, and Ole Miss should make the playoff this year.
Yeah.
They have the easiest schedule in the SEC.
I would say that their non-conference schedule is just as easy as Missouri's. I do think Missouri is a little bit given a little bit easier task with at Bama, Auburn, and Oklahoma as their hardest ones when Ole Miss has LSU and at Oklahoma. And then, of course, hosting Georgia, which would be probably the number 1 team in the country by then. But that is a pretty easy SEC schedule and a very manageable one the way it sets up. And quite frankly, Ole Miss fans have the expectation they're going to the college football playoff this year. And if you look at that schedule and what they have, they should, but Lane Kiffin will screw it up.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he no very question. Well might. I put them at the bottom because they dodge Auburn and Alabama. Well, that's huge
do,
for them.
They do dodge Alabama, and there was no way on earth that Lane Kiffin was ever going to beat Nick Saban.
Mm-hmm.
They could keep playing for the next 15 years, and he'd go 0-15.
Well, I have
so that is a huge upgrade for them.
No doubt. I have Ole Miss at the bottom. I have Missouri at 15. I think they have the second easiest schedule.
Sure.
Well, who do you have at 15?
I go Missouri easiest, then Ole Miss. So we just have
okay.
a flip-flop.
Okay. All right. So I have at 14. Again, ranking toughest to easiest. We're moving from the bottom on our way up, easiest to hardest. I have Texas A&M at 14. I have them with the third easiest schedule in the SEC, which may be somewhat right. of a hot take, okay? Because some people may say that it's a difficult schedule. They do open up with Notre Dame, okay? They do. They open up with Notre Dame, which is not an easy game.
L.
But then they have McNeese State. Okay. They go on the road at Florida early, which is that's a tough
it's
one.
That's do or die right there. That will be the entire career for Billy Napier at Florida.
You think so?
They will put every chip that they have into that, especially if they lose to Miami to open up the season.
That's such a big game, man.
Huge.
That's such a big game. But then they have Bowling Green. They'll play Arkansas neutral site, home versus
That's
Missouri.
It's a weird game.
It is. That game played in Dallas, always weird. They get to host Missouri.
Ill.
They go on the road to Mississippi State. They catch LSU again, but it is at home. It is at Kyle Field.
Ill.
They go to South Carolina. I'm not worried about that. New Mexico State. They do play at Auburn, and then they host Texas, which is going to be a lot of fun.
LL, Cool J, A&M to end the season. Double L's.
This schedule's a little bit harder than what I gave it credit for, I'll
be honest. I thought that was a little bit of a reach. I've got them further down. I'm going to tell you that I may have a hot take here. I have their counterparts across the state, and Austin is the third easiest schedule. Yeah, they host Colorado State. Kind of a gritty little mid-major team, but they should handle business there. Then they travel to Michigan. That will not be the same Michigan team you saw last year, guys. Sorry, I know it's the big house, and I'll have them ranked number one because in Uncle T-Bone's poll, it's a top 20, not a top 25 because the other five teams don't really deserve recognition because I'm old school. And the defending national champion always stays number one until they're knocked off. Well, congratulations, Michigan. You're going to be number one in Uncle T's poll for 2 weeks.
Two whole weeks.
Because I think Texas will go in there and get them. And then after that, it's a cakewalk until they go into the Red River rivalry, which they struggle against Oklahoma.
Oklahoma gives them everything they want.
They struggle against Oklahoma. But by then, Oklahoma's going to already played one of the toughest schedules in the SEC. But the back-to-back weeks, Oklahoma and Georgia – but they get Georgia at home.
Yeah.
That'll be one of the biggest college football games in the regular season in the last 10 years. After that, it's a cakewalk. I mean, I think their last five games, Kentucky's their hardest game, and that's in Austin. I think A&M will be dead in the rights by then. Give me Texas as your third easiest schedule. What a gift coming to the SEC. Welcome to the SEC. Here's one of the easier schedules you'll get.
Yeah, and you know, there's been a lot of talk about the comparison of the Texas and Oklahoma schedules, both of them coming to the SEC. I need to make a change in mine. I did not give enough respect to A&M. So I'm not perfect. I'm going to make a change. All right, I'm going to make
this
a change.
This is called backing up and punting, folks.
Yeah, this is called knowing when to fold them. And that's exactly what I'm going to do here. I think I overlooked it a little bit, so apologies on that.
Well,
I'm going to put
– the problem for A&M is, yeah, they got a lot of talent, but they've had a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't even come close to getting it done on a regular basis. I don't think Jimbo had more than 9 wins. A lot of people say Jimbo's washed up. He's still a national championship coach. You know, I'm sorry. I mean, he, you know, a lot of programs would like to have Jimbo Fisher still. Not me, but a lot of programs would. And they still hadn't got it done. Who's their go-to? Who's their big dog? I mean, I haven't really digged in, but, you know, I can name some big dogs on some other teams. A&M, they got some talent. But I just don't think they're that good of a team, and he's going to have some of those first-year coaching blues.
Mm-hmm.
And then that schedule is a lot tougher than you kind of looked at. They're not very good. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to flip my 13 and 14. So I have Ole Miss at the bottom, Missouri at the second, easiest. I'm going to put Arkansas in that third spot, and then I'll put A&M one above them. So I'm just going to move that around just a hair, and I'm going to put Arkansas down there. Arkansas playing just a weird schedule. They don't open with this team, but their second game of the year, they're at Oklahoma State.
Hell,
I don't know why in the world you sign up to go to that game. They have UAB on there. They do play at Auburn.
That's going
to
be a funny game for them.
Which one?
UAB.
Yeah, it will.
The
wouldn't sign up to play
them. The problem with Arkansas, it's even more exasperated than A&M. They're horrible. So every team that they're playing can get them.
Texas A&M,
that makes
neutral
their schedule
site.
That much naturally harder.
Yeah, you're right. Tennessee at home, LSU at home.
All losses.
They play at Mississippi State. Ooh. They host Ole Miss. They host Texas. They host Louisiana Tech, and then they go on the road to Missouri. They get all their tough games at home.
Hey, back in the day,
except Auburn,
around November, you didn't want La Tech coming to town.
Mm-mm.
They could get you. I've seen it happen twice to Auburn.
So I have Arkansas 14. I'll put A&M at 13 just so I don't have to move them around anymore. Who do you have at 12? All right, we're working bottom to the way up. We'll do this one, maybe one more before we get to all break. Right, do you have at number 12?
Quick recap, easiest. 16, Mississippi, Ole Miss 15. I got Texas 14. I need to do 13.
Oh, yeah, okay. What's your 13?
Remember, there are 16 teams.
Oh, goodness.
Kentucky.
Ooh.
Not a very difficult schedule, in my opinion, for the Cats. Let's take a quick look at this. Louisville, I mean, they've got Southern Miss. That's not the Southern Miss that it used to be. South Carolina, then they go to Georgia. That's an L. They come back and host Ohio at Ole Miss, most likely an L. That's a type game, though, I think Lane Kiffin can mess up.
Mm-hmm.
Vanderbilt. Go to Florida. Who knows what they'll be by then. Then they host Auburn. This will be the make-or-break game for them this season, is the Auburn game. Whether or not they're going to have a successful season in Lexington, which is 8 wins or more. At Tennessee, at Texas, very difficult. They get Murray State in between, and Louisville's not going to be very good.
Kentucky is interesting in that schedule because they are one of those old SEC East teams that is not benefiting from there not being divisions anymore, right? Because they're picking up numerous former SEC West teams, right? They play Auburn. They play Ole Miss. They are...
I guess you would call Texas a West team.
I mean, you're picking up Texas. Like, that's not cool for them. They were used to playing Vanderbilt every year, which they play this year, but they were also used to playing, you know, South Carolina, who they play this year, and playing the other bottom feeders of the SEC
East.
I'm
going to bet if you go back and look at all the schedules after we get through with this, that Kentucky's schedule looks more like a divisional type schedule than any other team in the league.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because there's a lot of teams on here that they're used to playing. South Carolina, Georgia, Vandy, Florida, Tennessee. Heck, they get everybody out of the old SEC East.
Yeah, just about.
So they'll be well and versed on all of those games and where the travel is. So that at Texas is going to be brutal for them. By then, who knows what Kentucky will be.
You have them at 13?
At 13.
I have them at 12, so I'll go ahead and give you mine. I'll go ahead and give you my 12. You can give yours as well, then we'll get to break. I have Kentucky at 12. I'm with you. I mean, you have to start 2-0. You have a huge chance hosting Georgia. I'm not buying in. I'm not doing it.
No.
I'm not picking Kentucky ever again against Georgia.
Don't do it.
Then you play Ohio. You're at Ole Miss. That's a game I think Kentucky can win. I think you can win that game in Oxford. You have to beat Vanderbilt. In the middle of the season, who knows what Florida is when you go on the road. They very well may have cashed it in by that point, and I think Kentucky's a better team than Florida this year. You do host
They've
Auburn.
They've stepped up over the last couple of years and beaten Florida.
They have. They broke the curse, right? They broke the curse. And you mentioned it. You don't have to go to Jordan-Hare. You get to host Auburn. That's a big deal for them. And that's a game that they've had a chance to win before and haven't been able to do it. You're at Tennessee. That's tough. You get Murray State. At Texas, yeah, that's brutal. But then you host Louisville, who's putrid.
Yeah, the problem. One of the big problems for Kentucky is they'll be breaking in a new quarterback who's a transfer from Georgia. A lot of experience being a backup.
Yes.
But now you're the man in the SEC. Good luck with that.
Who's your number 12 quickly before we get to break?
I've got Tennessee. They start the season against Chattanooga. They'll play NC State, which is a little bit harder than Ole Miss playing Wake Forest. Kent State at Oklahoma. I think they can win that game. Arkansas, Florida. I think they'll be favored in every game they play until they host Alabama. And the last time Alabama traveled up there, they messed around and found out. Then they get their old SEC rival, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Georgia, that's the game probably on the schedule for Tennessee this season to see if they can finally break through and get into a college football playoff. UTEP and Vandy, not a very difficult schedule, but they do catch Alabama and Georgia.
We're ranking the SEC easiest and toughest schedules for 2024. We've made it through six. We're moving on and continuing up as we go. Give us a text, 334-784-1067. Shoot us a text, I guess. We want to hear from you. Who has the hardest schedule? Who has the easiest schedule? And how would you rank them 1 through 16? We're talking more about this when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
We continue on ranking the easiest to toughest schedules in SEC football this season. I misspoke on the way out. We've gone through five teams so far, so I may need to pick up the pace a little bit here, Uncle T-Bone. We have 16 through 12. I have from easiest to hardest. I have Ole Miss, Missouri, Arkansas, Texas A&M, and Kentucky. All right, those are the five that I have so far. Read off your five, bottom two, 12, and then we'll continue on. We'll try to get through some more here.
Missouri, Ole Miss, Texas, Kentucky, Tennessee. I think if I could, I'd go back and switch Tennessee and Kentucky.
Okay, well, I have Kentucky at 12, and I have Tennessee at 11. Tennessee, a team that you talked about as we were getting to break, it's a schedule that is doable for them,
yeah.
But it's still not considered easy, right? It's a schedule that some people say is easy, right? Chattanooga, NC State, that's a tricky game. That's a tricky game neutral site that you have to show up and play. We've seen Tennessee have some dogfights in these neutral games, neutral site games.
NC State is no pushover. They got a funny trip to open up SEC play at Norman, Oklahoma, who they had a two-game series set with back when Butch Jones was finishing up, and Oklahoma took care of business in both of those games. So they get past OU, though. This is a team that can make the college football playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you still have games.
You get
against
past NC State and OU, and I think they are a real threat to get in that final 12.
They host Alabama, a huge game for them. We know that. You have to go to Georgia, but if you can, you know, try to squeak out one of those, and Tennessee's got a real chance. So I have them at 11. Who do you have at 11? Again, we're moving easiest to toughest. We move our way through the SEC. Who is your number 11 team this year?
Let's see here. No, Tennessee was my 11.
10, okay. 16, 15. Okay.
No, 11. Excuse me. Texas A&M.
Texas A&M. Okay. Yep. Interesting. Go ahead.
We've already talked about them.
Yep.
It's a little bit more difficult schedule, face value, that game they open up. I mean, how would you like to open up your very first game as a new coach against Notre Dame?
I think I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd rather open up with UTEP. See if I can't get my sea legs under me before we go on and play the Fighting Irish. You're going to be a pretty good football team this year. Recruiting lights out right now.
Yes.
So they will get the benefit of playing Arkansas like they normally does, and Arkansas is horrible. I'm sorry. I mean, that's normally a weird game, but you know, I could see that being a funny game for them. Host Missouri. Much better than going up to Columbia. The start of the season, once you get past Notre Dame, is not that difficult. We talked about it, the key game, I think, in their schedule and Florida's schedule early on is at Florida. I mean, that's going to be do or die. And if you lose to Notre Dame, you're going to need to go over to Florida after you play McNeese State and get a W.
Yeah, I have Tennessee at 11. I gave you that as well. We move into the top 10. All right, we've done the six. We're moving into the top 10 of toughest schedules in the SEC. I have Texas at 10, a team that you had below that just a little bit. You mentioned their schedule, again, opening up with Colorado State. They take a trip to the Big House. I cannot wait for that game. Their first big game representing the SEC with the logo on their jersey. I'm excited for that. They're going to just wreck Mississippi State to open up SEC play at home there in Austin. Oklahoma, neutral site. They're going to host Georgia, where they have a chance to really get a big-time win to get SEC play cranked up if they can beat Mississippi State and Oklahoma. Here's my thing, though. Their toughest road game is at Texas A&M. Like, their schedule's not that bad. I gave them a little bit more respect because they do play Oklahoma. You play Georgia. But, man, this schedule is not that hard for Texas by any means. And they should be primed and ready to go to make a college football playoff. At Vandy, home for Florida, at Arkansas, home for Kentucky, and at A&M to end of the season. That won't be an easy game, even if A&M is winless, just because of the history there. But look, Texas has got it handed to them. First year in the SEC, they should be threatening to make a college football playoff. I have them at number 10.
Yeah, I've got Auburn at 10. This is, I don't want to say easy, but one of the more manageable schedules in my lifetime for Auburn University. Kick it off with Alabama A&M. They'll host Cal. I think Auburn will be much improved from the time they played Cal last year. I don't know how improved Cal will be. New Mexico, no, that's not New Mexico State. Then they get Arkansas. They should be 4-0 hosting Oklahoma September 25th in the fifth game of the season, and they should have all the momentum in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that's still going to be a very difficult game, but there's a lot of Auburn people circling a W there. Travel to Georgia, then to Missouri, but you get a break in between the two. Then they go to Kentucky. After that, the meat of the season's back at home till you go to Alabama. Anything can happen in an Iron Bowl. Vanderbilt, Louisiana Monroe, Texas A&M. I think they should win all three of those games before going to Tuscaloosa.
You have Auburn at 10 in your rankings.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That
okay.
Is correct.
All right, I'm going to move on. I have LSU at 9.
I got them at 9 also.
I think this is a favorable schedule for them. You still have tough games on there, but games that LSU, with the talent that they say they have and the coaches they have on that staff, Brian Kelly's looking to take a big step this year. They have USC to open up neutral site. That's going to be a lot of fun. I believe that's the – is that the Sunday night game again this year in that opening week of college football? I'm sure it is. That Sunday or even that Monday night game. I don't have the date on it.
It is on September 1st. Let me check.
Okay, yeah, I don't have – they've done that the last couple of years, right, with Florida State and things like that. They've opened up and played like that Sunday night game.
Sunday night game.
Okay, cool. So that'll be a lot of fun, LSU and USC.
In Las Vegas.
Ooh,
that'll be a lot of fun.
Okay, how about that? They'll have Nicholls State. They open up SEC play at South Carolina. There's that random game against UCLA in the middle of the year, and then South Alabama. God, the start of the schedule is so weird. But I think LSU should be undefeated to start that. I think they win all those games. I think they're good enough to do it. I think they are undefeated when they host Ole Miss. Then they go to Arkansas at A&M, hosting Alabama at Florida. That'll be dead in the water by that point. Hosting Vandy and hosting Oklahoma. That's a dark horse college football playoff team.
I think it's going to be about the quarterback play down in Baton Rouge. Jaden Daniels was remarkable. Can Nussmeier step in and take over? And then you got to remember, they got two first-round draft picks at wide receiver they have to replace. But he's recruited very well down there, and LSU's always going to have talent.
We're through half of the SEC schedules. We're starting to talk about some difficult ones. 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Stay tuned.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Having some fun here in hour number two. We are ranking the toughest to easiest, or I guess easiest to toughest, SEC football schedules for 2024. And we've made it through half, Uncle T-Bone. We have made it through the bottom half, who we consider have the easier schedules in the SEC. I'll give you mine real quick. You can name yours, and then we'll get into the top eight. Okay, I have, starting at the bottom, easiest, working our way up, Ole Miss, Missouri, Arkansas, Texas A&M, Kentucky, Tennessee, Texas, and LSU. Those are my bottom half SEC easy schedules for the year.
Yeah, I've got Missouri, Ole Miss, Texas, Kentucky, Tennessee, Texas A&M, Auburn, and LSU.
So you can send us a text. We want to hear your thoughts on this. Who has the hardest? Who has the easiest? Where would you put Auburn? Where would you put Alabama? And maybe some predictions as well. Shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. Not taking calls right now. We got to get through our rankings, but we do want you to be a part of this. 334-784-1067. Shoot us a text in the On the Line text box. Okay. Number eight, we get to the top half of the SEC. This is when you start to consider, okay, these teams have a difficult or really hard, or at least you start to notice, all right, these teams are going to have some really tough games on the schedule. Who do you have at number eight?
I've got Arkansas. I think their schedule is a little bit tougher than you gave them credit for. Do you know they play UAPB and UAB in the first 3 weeks of the season?
Yeah.
That's Arkansas, Pine Bluff, University of Alabama, Birmingham. They're going to lose one of those. They're going to lose at Oklahoma State.
Wow.
Then they go into the meat of the season. Wow. Listen to this run. At Auburn, Texas A&M, Tennessee, LSU, they're 0-4 there. They go to at Mississippi State. That might be one of the only SEC games they win this season. Then they close it out. Ole Miss, Texas, Louisiana Tech, and Missouri. They could lose all four of those games, too. That's not an easy schedule for a very bad football team.
Man, you no love in just dogging on Arkansas.
Man, when you're bringing in, and I think Sam Pittman's been there 3 years, maybe four, but when you're in that years and you're still bringing in 25 to 30 transfer people a year trying to save your roster 3, 4 years, 5 years deep, you're doomed. You're doomed. You cannot make a living unless your name is Lane Kiffin in mass wholesale roster changes in the transfer portal. You can stabilize your program, but you cannot go forward with it.
Their
recruiting's horrible.
Yeah, it is. I'm struggling with the middle part of this conversation. And I have my list, but I'm struggling to accept it, I guess, because the schedules across the board have just gotten so much harder in the SEC because of the additions of Texas and Oklahoma. Duh. But man, it's just hard to look at some of these and compare them because of who everybody has to play.
Here's the way I see it. If you're not one of the top three easiest or top three hardest, everyone else in the middle really and truly is just about interchangeable.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair to look at.
I think you got to use some X factors in these decisions, like how bad these teams are, like Arkansas, like Vandy, and like South Carolina and Mississippi State, because naturally that makes their schedule even harder.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, I'm going to look at a few things here. And ultimately, I'm going to pick – man, see, I just – again, I've got my list. I'm just going against it. But I'm going to say I'm going to go with Mississippi State. I'm going to pick Mississippi State at my number 8. And here's why. They have three really tough road games this season, at Texas, at Georgia. Both of those are back-to-back, by the way. They also go to Tennessee, and heck, they go to Ole Miss, too. Like, that's not an easy schedule for them. They also play at Arizona State. So, is it even fair to put them at number 8? You could say their schedule's even harder.
Yeah, I've got them further down at 5.
I don't know, man. I don't know. You know what? I'm putting Alabama at 8. I'm going to do it. Why not? We'll put Alabama at 8. They have a difficult schedule for them, but it's still a doable schedule for them. We talked about this a little bit earlier. They open up with Western Kentucky and South Florida. You should be 2-0. Yes, you play at Wisconsin. And yes, that's going to be a crazy atmosphere up there in Madison. And Luke Fickell is a really, really good head coach who gave Alabama everything they wanted in the college football playoff a few years ago when he was the head coach of the Bearcats at Cincinnati. But Alabama has more talent than them. They're a better team than them. And you can make the argument that Kalen DeBoer is a better coach than Luke Fickell. One's been to the national championship game and the other one has not. You should be 3-0, realistically, if you're Alabama.
Whew.
Okay.
Man, I think you are giving them a lot of credit here.
You should be. Now, you play Georgia at home, of course. Your toughest game of the year is at home. Shocker. You go to Vanderbilt. Yikes. Hosting South Carolina. Yikes. You're at Tennessee. That'll be a fun one. You host Missouri. So, one of your other toughest games of the year at home. You do play at LSU, which is tough. You do play at Oklahoma, which is tough. And you host Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Alabama has a tough schedule. But as you said, so many of these are interchangeable at this point. I'll put Alabama at 8, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, well, I've got Alabama at the third hardest schedule in the league this season.
Wow, okay.
And I think it's for several reasons. You got a first-year coach. I don't care who it is. You're always going to have some type of issues in your first year of coaching. I call it the first-year coaching blues. I've talked to several Alabama people I'm friends with. They are not real thrilled about this schedule.
Why? Because it's hard?
Yeah, I mean, it's just very tricky. That game at Wisconsin, Luke Fickell's going to have something for Alabama. And Madtown can be wild. And Wisconsin gets going. That's a team that I've seen several big-time teams go into Madtown over the years and get taken care of. Wisconsin rolls, the Badgers roll on momentum. If they can get up on Alabama early in that game, you better watch out. That is a tricky, tricky trip right there for Alabama, and that's a place that they have not – I'm not even sure they've ever played up there.
So they, I have Alabama at 8. Who do you have at your number
Well, I've, yeah, I already said Arkansas at 8. We'll go down to 7. Right. I'm going to take Vanderbilt at 7.
Okay.
This is where all these really bad teams all get lumped in together in the SEC for me. Virginia Tech, they open up with at home L. You know,
You think the Hokies walk in there to Nashville and take that?
Yes. Alcorn State, that'll be a W. At Georgia State, you're going to Georgia State. That is going to be a tricky game for Vanderbilt. Georgia State is no pushover. At Missouri L, hosting Alabama and Nashville, that's like Tuscaloosa North when the Tide comes to town. At Kentucky L, Ball State W, hosting Texas L. At Auburn, the week after you play Texas, they'll be just dominated by then. Auburn will kill them. South Carolina, L. At LSU, L. And, I mean, this is a brutal schedule, and then they finish up against Tennessee. They get Texas, Alabama, LSU, and Tennessee.
Yeah, I have them higher than what you do. My seventh team, hardest schedule in the SEC, I have Auburn. All right, I have Auburn right there because they still have to make a trip to Athens and to Tuscaloosa. I don't want people to forget that, and I don't want people outside of Auburn to forget that. Believe me, a lot of you listening right now, I don't have to remind you of that. But non-Auburn fans, they look at the schedule, Alabama, A&M, California, New Mexico, Arkansas. As everybody agrees, this team should be 4-0. But you still have to go to Georgia. You still have to go to Alabama at the end of the year for the Iron Bowl. Year one, Iron Bowl under Kalen DeBoer. You're telling me that fan base isn't going to be fired up when Auburn walks in there? A team that could be better than theirs? Yeah, they're going to be ready to go by the time the Iron Bowl rolls around. And you have to remember and look at this. Auburn does not play a home game in the month of October. It's easier because you host your first five games.
I hate it when they do that.
I do, too. I do, too. I think it's dumb. I think it's ridiculous. There's no reason for it to be this way, but Auburn got the hose once again in that regard. You do not play a home game in the month of October.
It may work in our favor, though, and allow Hugh to get five wins at home and really set the foundation for a successful season, but normally I'm a anti-this type schedule.
And in those road games, because you played three road games in October and the bye week in there, I think you need to win two of the three. The combination of Georgia, Missouri, Kentucky, win two of the three. That should be the expectation.
No, no way.
Why not?
The expectation is to go one.
If you start 5-0, you don't think Auburn should win two of those road games?
Well, I mean, I'll have to see when we get to there, but preseason, Missouri and Georgia are far better than Auburn.
I guess we'll see. You come back home for Vandy. You come back home for Louisiana Monroe. You're back home for Texas A&M. You should win all three of those games.
Definitely the expectation should be 3-0 there.
Sure. And then, you know, if you start 4-1, you win those three. You've got seven wins. I mean, and then you go on the road in a 50-50 Iron Bowl. I mean, this season could turn out well for Auburn. And I think the schedule stacks up nicely.
5-0. You get one out of the three on the road. You're 6-2. You win the next three. You're 9-2.
When you go to Tuscaloosa.
When you go to Tuscaloosa and you're praying that it hasn't been a Rose Garden up there in Kalen DeBoer's first season, and somehow, some way you get a W there, and you're staring at the possibility of going to college football playoff.
I look at it more of Auburn going 4-1 in those first five because I think Oklahoma's a really good team. Not that Auburn can't win it, but I think if you go 4-1, okay, then you go 2 out of 3 on the road. You're what, 6-2? So same thing. You win those three. It's the same situation. The Oklahoma game is that flip game.
It's that flip game.
It is.
When Auburn goes 4-0 to start the season, they better put every ounce of the season into that Oklahoma game. I don't care if you're give out and you go to Georgia and get beat by 50.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. But what would really matter is starting out 5-0.
And then having a chance to turn around after that Georgia game and winning at Missouri and at Kentucky.
Getting a week off and getting regrouped.
And then building for the back half of the season.
I'm
100% with you. So I have Auburn at the 7th hardest schedule in the SEC. And I think that's, since we're in the front half now, that's how we need to word it. The back half are the easiest schedules. These are now the hardest schedules. I have Auburn at 7. Who do you have at 6?
South Carolina. They'll open up the season against Old Dominion. That'll be a decent ball game. At Kentucky, that's a toss-up game. Hosting LSU, They'll have family weekend up in Columbia on September 21st against Akron. That shouldn't be a problem. And then it gets really real for the Gamecocks. Ole Miss, Alabama, Oklahoma, Texas A&M. They get a breather against Vanderbilt. But they've struggled against the Commodores over the years, an old Eastern Division foe. Then they get Missouri, Wofford, and then they got to play Clemson to cap it off. That's not an easy schedule, folks.
So you have them at 6, right?
Yes.
I have Georgia at 6. That's the team that I have. It's the 6th hardest schedule in the SEC this season. And the reason I have Georgia at 6 is because their schedule's tough, man. Their schedule is tough this year compared to what it's been in the past. I mean, this is not going to be a cakewalk year for Georgia like it's been in the SEC East, where they have just feasted on the Kentuckys and the Vanderbilts and the South Carolinas of the world.
Heck, in Florida lately, too.
Exactly. This is a team.
And Auburn.
This is a team that opens up with Clemson neutral site, which is still a tough game. You go at Kentucky week 3, which, yes, they're a much better team than Kentucky, but it's still on the road to open up SEC play, followed by a road trip to Tuscaloosa to take on Alabama, followed by hosting Auburn the very next game. Then you have Mississippi State, whatever. It's a schedule that has you going to Texas in their first year in the SEC. They're going to be ready to go when you roll into town. Still playing Florida neutral site. You're in Oxford for Ole Miss, and if Ole Miss is anything good of a team, that fan base will be rowdy and drunk and ready to go when that team shows up. You still have to host Tennessee at the near the end of the year, too. Georgia has a tough schedule,
no,
man.
No, it's tough.
I have them at 6.
And I have them at 4. Obviously opening up against Clemson and Atlanta. That's not going to be a cakewalk by any means. They'll kill Kentucky. That Alabama game really could swing their season and propel it to number one. You know, if they can get by Clemson, if they could go into Tuscaloosa, be 4-0, hosting Auburn, probably number one, if not Texas being number one by that time, my prediction. You said it. Traveling to Texas, that could be the SEC game of the year. The cocktail party might be it might be the swan song for Billy Napier there. Who knows what happens? That's a hard back end of the season. Ole Miss, Tennessee. Hey, man, Georgia Tech's improved. I know it's Georgia Tech, and they've been bad. That's a team that went 7-6 last year. Jeff Collins is a good coach.
Yeah, so I have Georgia at 6.
That's no cakewalk.
No, it's not. And then have we gotten into our top fives yet?
We have not done our top five. Maybe we can squeeze in 5 real quick.
Yeah,
I've
let's
got
go.
Mississippi State at 5. That is not an easy schedule, and the Bulldogs breaking in a new coach. You said it earlier. They got to go to the desert and play Arizona State.
That's for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one of those. You know, everyone was doing the neutral site games, and then it got sexy again to do the home and aways. And a lot of teams, probably like Mississippi State right now, are wishing they wouldn't have done it. Who knows what they're going to have next year? I've got to dig into their roster because there's going to be so many new names on it. This is a team that's probably gone wholesale change in the transfer portal.
I have Vanderbilt at number 5, and I'm going to keep it short and sweet. They play at Missouri, Bama, at Kentucky, Texas, at Auburn, South Carolina, at LSU, and Tennessee. That's a Vanderbilt team. And not to mention, you said it earlier, Virginia Tech and Georgia State in the non-conference schedule. Yikes. Going to be rough there in Nashville.
Two things about my Mississippi State at 5 being rough, and that is a tough schedule. Weird to see Auburn not on the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just not right. They end the season their last 3 games at Tennessee, hosting Missouri, at Ole Miss.
Yeah, not
welcome
good.
Welcome to the SEC, Jeff Lebby.
Yep, I will tell you where I have Mississippi State and the others. We're getting into our top 4. We'll get it in and wrap up the show after this here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. We've been ranking our toughest to easiest and easiest to toughest schedules in the SEC for football this season. We gave you number five. Our top fours are similar. We'll go ahead and get through four and three really quickly because these are teams that we've talked about. I have Vanderbilt at five, Mississippi State, the fourth toughest schedule in the SEC this season. I mean, the games that they have to play, and this is more about brutal. The team that they are. It's brutal. It really,
what a terrible
really is.
Draw.
I mean, you play at Arizona State non-conference, at Texas, at Georgia, at Tennessee, at Ole Miss. I mean, give me a break, man.
At
Mississippi
the unemployment
State.
Line.
So I have them at four,
yeah.
And I have South Carolina at three, a team we've talked a lot about. At Kentucky, you host LSU, you host Ole Miss, at Bama, at Oklahoma, and at Clemson to end the year. See ya.
You know, I like to talk about, you know, every fan base just about right now except Vanderbilt's and probably Arkansas's are realistically thinking, you know, we could be a top 20 team at worst, right? Because it's fan time of year. People get pumped up. And I'm always like, listen, not everybody can win 10 games. You know that. And there's a lot of disappointment coming around the corner. But I do see a team here that I'm going to circle, and I'm going to get back to this later, that I think could be a surprise team in the SEC, and that's South Carolina.
Really?
That schedule's difficult, but it's manageable. If they can sneak a few wins in there, Jacob, that could be an 8-9 win team.
Okay. All right. Write it down. Somebody bookmark it and come back in the middle of October when South Carolina's under 500.
I hope so.
Well, we saved the last two, the two toughest schedules in the SEC, because these are pretty much universal across the board.
Real quick, my number four and three were Georgia and Alabama.
Oh, that's right.
And it's weird for me to see on paper, at least in my mind, Auburn having a much more manageable schedule than them two. That normally does not happen. Both of those teams have significantly harder schedules than they've had, and we've already talked about them, so we're not going to go back into it.
Universally, I think this is pretty much across the board. Oklahoma has the second toughest schedule in the SEC. They have – you open up – non-conference play is miserable, okay?
It really is.
You open up hosting Temple, which I know that's not a whole lot. You host Houston out of the Big 12, and then you host Tulane. I don't know when teams are going to figure out to quit playing Tulane, but eventually they're going to figure it out. So those are your first three games. Oklahoma could lose one of those three games before SEC play even starts.
I agree with you. Didn't Tulane just get a big-time, or at least for them, a big-time transfer portal quarterback in?
I'd have to double-check on that.
And then Houston's got one heck of a quarterback. That's a team that has given Oklahoma some problems in the past, along with TCU. They always seem to play the Sooners tough. I could realistically see an upset loss between those two games.
And then they open up SEC play hosting Tennessee.
Especially Tulane, because you're looking ahead to Tennessee.
Exactly. Hosting Tennessee. Then they come to Auburn, that big-time game we continue to talk about.
Huge game.
Then they play Texas neutral site, South Carolina at home. Then this is where it just gets brutal. At Ole Miss. They play Maine in there for whatever reason.
Hey, the Black Bears are tough on defense, man.
Okay. At Ole Miss. At Missouri, home for Bama, at LSU.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
Doesn't matter what they do leading up to that point. There are numerous losses in the back end of that schedule.
Those three last games are even harder than the ones I just rattled off for Mississippi State. At Missouri, hosting Alabama at LSU, you know that's going to be a night game.
And then everybody agrees. Even if you don't agree with Oklahoma, if you haven't agreed with anything behind this point, Florida. The toughest schedule, not just in the SEC, some people say in college football.
I mean, I completely agree with that. It's bad enough that you have to play Florida State to end the season, and they're going to be good.
Opening with Miami.
Open with Miami. And you do the trifecta and take on Central Florida.
Ugh.
I mean, why are you doing – who scheduled that? Someone who's trying to get rid of Billy Napier?
That's what it seems like to me.
He will not be back after next season.
Man, this was a lot of fun. This was awesome. We appreciate you all being with us here. Check out the podcast if you missed any of the show today. Uncle T-Bone, you're out the rest of the week. I'll be back tomorrow and Friday.
Yep, I'll see you all Monday.
That's right. Until then, we'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.